10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Oh, goodness. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is Tim Hyland, and joining me as always is my co-host Mike Unger. Mike, it's week four now, and I was taking my dog Zeke for a walk this evening, and there was something about the weather tonight specifically. And I saw some leaves kind of like slowly dropping off the trees. And I'm like, oh, I think we're here, Mike. It is fall.
I noticed I'm actually also watching a dog. Her name is Lady Di. She's currently sleeping on the couch, forcing me to relocate my podcast position. But I also noticed that it's getting darker earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely fall is in the air. I'm not complaining, though.
No, it's time, right, Mike? It's time.
Absolutely. It's absolutely.
So how was your weekend of college football, Mike? Because I had no idea, because, you know, you're very private about your schedule. I never know where you're going to be. So
I'm very public about it on this show afterward.
So I start getting texts from my sister, and I didn't actually put two and two together, because you were texting, I think, photos of the TV you were watching at the bar you were at, and then so she was texting photos of TVs at the bar she was at, and then I figured out, oh, you're at the same bar. And not just you and my sister, but noted listener, Cousin Dave.
Absolutely. We were at Nano Brew in Ohio City, in the city of Cleveland, which, speaking of Zeke, we're hearing him now in the background.
Yeah, he's so nice.
What a stupid name for a neighborhood, by the way, Ohio City. I mean, it's a neighborhood in Cleveland, and it's a very cool neighborhood. But just to use this state and put a city after it, I don't get it. But yeah, we were at Nano Brew in Cleveland. We had a great time watching the noon windows, despite running into some true meathead Ohio State Buckeye fans. But there were awesome games at noon: Pitt, Penn State, Maryland Temple, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. Indiana, Ohio State was not one of your better nooners. But we had a great time. Great time watching the ball games there with Cousin Dave and Colleen and Allison. It was an awesome Saturday.
I love the visual of a Indiana fan, a West Virginia fan, and a Penn State fan at a bar that is probably a de facto Ohio State bar watching the games. Like, did you guys catch any flack when you were there?
Well, this is what I'll never understand. You went through a similar situation when you tried to watch the Browns game at an empty bar in Philadelphia yesterday. So we walk into Nano Brew. It's very, very empty. You know, we got there early because we wanted to secure good seats. There are four huge TVs behind the bar. They're all tuned to Fox because they're gonna have Indiana Ohio State on. We asked for one TV to be put on the Penn State Pitt game. The bartender was super cool, said, yeah, absolutely, no problem. But then this group of four meathead Buckeye fans came in and loudly protesting, why is Ohio State not on all four TVs?
Ugh.
Now, Tim, if Indiana was undefeated in the Rose Bowl, I would not need them on four TVs next to each other. I just don't understand the logic. In fact, I would not want them to be on four TVs next to each other. I'd want other games. So that kind of sets the tone for these guys. They were, of course, the game was such an ass kicking. At one point, one of them yelled out, talking about Indiana, I believe he yelled out, Indiana's a bunch of nerds. Very odd comment. Very, very odd comment.
I mean, who uses the term nerds anyway anymore?
Well, you know, he should have yelled out Indiana's a bunch of very average high school students. That would be far more accurate. But overall, because of the game, the situation, it was never a threat. It really wasn't a big deal. We didn't run into that many obnoxious Ohio State fans. But it was a great time. A lot of good beer at Nano Brew. Penn State was in a real slugfest. West Virginia rolled, making Cousin Dave happy. Actually, Dave and I, he had the West Virginia game on his phone, and I had the Maryland Temple game on my phone because the Indiana game had to be on so many TVs there. But thank God for technology.
Indeed, Mike. All right, let's review the game, shall we?
We shall.
Let's start with how about Penn State Pitt, Mike? Now, last
week—that's going to surprise our listeners down south that we're starting out with Penn State.
I will say it was a good game, and my other thing too is, so of course I missed the first quarter and a half because I was coaching Joey, but I sat down with I think 7.5 minutes or so to go in the second quarter, and I within the first five or six plays, and I'm guessing you'll confirm this, Mike, Pitt came to play, and Pitt came to play with a chip on their shoulder, and they. I'm not going to say they were playing dirty, but they were playing, as Bobby Bowden used to say, to the echo of the whistle. And I give them credit. I think that's what that game deserved. It's the 100th. It's the last in the series, and Penn State's the one responsible for canceling it. Penn State, I mean, Pitt, from what I saw, for most of the first three quarters, physically dominated the game. Correct?
It was an absolute slugfest. It was a very, very physical game. In true Northeast football fashion, it was delayed. The start was delayed because of weather. It seems to happen a lot up there. But yeah, and also there was great buildup to this game with the little tiff between the coaches about stealing the signs with the one transfer from Penn State to Pitt. Love that. It really is a shame that the rivalry is ending because it's a fun early September. It's a fun September game. For everyone in Pennsylvania, certainly, but I would say nationally as well, because you're right, Pitt, despite the fact that they were outmanned, they really showed up, and they converted a lot of fourth down plays at the end there. You can really question Narduzzi kicking that field goal with five
oh my
minutes
God.
Left down.
He doubled
seven.
Down today. He was still like saying,
out. Yeah, he really has a lot of anger. Every time I see him interviewed, he seems very angry, and not in like a cute Nick Saban kind of way.
Right.
In like an angry steelworker kind of way. But maybe that makes him the perfect coach for Pitt. But yeah, very, very entertaining game.
So I will say, too, I think to my mind, the biggest play of the game was our kickoff guy being asked to kick a 57-yard field goal with no time left in the first half and nailed it.
Yeah.
Transfer from Va Tech, Mike, by the way.
Points, obviously, in a game that ends 17-10, points are at a premium, so that was a huge play.
How about Alabama 47, Carolina 23? I didn't see much of this game, Mike. I am hearing that Tua looks like he's back in Tua form, but there's some developments, too, with the South Carolina quarterback position, I believe.
Yeah, Helinski's in, right? Or
I think Helinski's in, yeah. And there was a lot of buzz about this kid before the season, and it took all three games for it to kind of...
Well, Bentley's out with an injury for the rest of the season. So, yeah, I didn't see any of this game, but I saw the highlights. Najee Harris on a fourth down reception in which he absolutely shed a South Carolina tackler, then hurtled over another, then pushed a third out of the way and route to a 40-something yard touchdown. One of the plays of the year so far, 2 of 5 touchdowns. If you recall, he was my Heisman pick. Not exactly, you know, I wasn't exactly going out on a limb there, but I think he and the entire Alabama offense have something to prove this season. So another very, very easy win for the Tide, even though South Carolina came through with the backdoor cover there at the end.
The most underrated part of the Najee Harris touchdown, Mike, was the did you catch the he did the Megan Rapinoe celebration at the end?
I did not. They did not share that on game day. They don't have enough time to show soccer celebrations.
So he gave her. He was asked about it after the game, and he gave a shout out. He's like something like much respect to her. It was on purpose. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
I'm sure that went over well with a great majority of the Alabama fan base. What do you think, Mike?
They're progressive thinking people down there. Yes.
Number 6, Ohio State 51, Indiana 10, a game near and dear to your heart, Mike. So I think last week I said that I thought the Hoosiers, you know, would maybe keep it close. As we've said since week one, it looks like Ohio State under Ryan Day is in good hands.
Especially because Ohio State, I don't know how the statement I'm about to say is true, but I don't know how it's true. Ohio State under Urban Meyer struggled with Indiana. Now, they always won,
right.
But the games were always close. They always somehow overlooked them, or they didn't play their best football against the Hoosiers. This was the polar opposite. The highlight of this game for Indiana was they went 3-and-out when they got the ball. Ohio State marched all the way down the field and missed a field goal, and that was like the peak of the game for Indiana when it was still 0-0. It was an absolute thrashing. IU was never even close to being in this game. Ohio State looks well-oiled at this point for sure. And then looking at Indiana's schedule, obviously a must-win against UConn this week, but with the improvement of Maryland, with the Purdue game, it's looking hard for me to see how IU is going to piece together their six wins. Interesting little stat tweeted out by the Bear, credit to him. Since 2015, there are only two Power 5 head coaches that have been an underdog at least six times and have not won a single game. One of them is Tom Allen, coach of your IU Hoosiers, 0-14. You want to take a stab at who the other one is?
No earthly idea.
Jim Harbaugh, 0-6 in that situation. So IU and Michigan, Tom Allen and Jim Harbaugh live together in that stat. I love that.
How about number 15, UCF 45, Stanford 27? I think we both agree, and everyone seems to, that this Stanford team going through a weird transition under David Shaw, where they're trying to open up their passing game, which is confusing to me. I don't understand why he's doing it. So they're not vintage Stanford. I get it. But at some point, I think we as College Football Nation has to acknowledge that UCF has proven the point, and that, I mean, let's face it, Mike, how about UCF versus the field in the Big Ten minus Ohio State? Who do you like?
That's a great point. I mean, at this point, you got to think UCF could play with anyone in the Big Ten. You know, they might struggle with Wisconsin possibly because of physical nature. I don't know, but I mean, taking Ohio State out of it, you're right. I wouldn't think anyone in the Big Ten would be more than a touchdown favorite over UCF. That's a very good point.
How about even more dramatically, how about UCF versus the entire Pac-12 or UCF versus the ACC minus Clemson? I mean, I'll take UCF, I think, across the board.
Yeah, the only conference in which they really might struggle is, well, the Big 12 scores a lot of points,
yeah,
too.
That's
which is kind of
unique ammo.
UCF's game. But this game was over before it even started, really. It was 28-0 in the first half. It's kind of a shame for UCF that when they scheduled, how long ago do you think they scheduled this game? You know, 5 years ago at a minimum?
More than that, probably, yeah.
Yeah, more than that, probably. It was back in Stanford's heyday, and they thought they were getting like a vintage Pac-12 team. Props to Stanford for going to Florida to play this game. I heard that this was Stanford's first ever regular season game in Florida, which it's not surprising when you think about it, but still a little eye-opening. Big, big win for UCF. They go to Pitt this week, another quote-unquote Power 5 team. Pitt's probably going to coming off a letdown. They put a lot of stock physically and emotionally into that Penn State game, so I would expect UCF to continue rolling.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Mike, because I didn't realize UCF was playing Pitt this week. And as we started the podcast, I was thinking, oh, my God, I didn't check the lines this week for my lock of the week. But just as last week, I was supremely confident that Temple
yes.
would cover for me against Maryland. I don't care what the line is. What's the UCF? What, 20?
This was one. No, they're favored by UCF is favored by 11.5.
Oh my God! There's my lock of the week, folks. There you go.
You're 3-0, by the way. We'll get to this, but you're 3-0, and you have been supremely confident. This was a humongous line jump. It opened at UCF favored by 2.5 and went all the way up to 11.5. That's a crazy jump.
By the way, Mike. So I think if our show's accomplished anything, there was a moment this weekend where I was driving back from Joey's game. No, it was the day before. It was Friday. And I called my parents, and I talked to my dad first about football and stuff, and then I talked to my mom. My mom she's a crazy Penn State fan, like, as you might know.
Yes, I do know.
Right. So I was saying, like, you know, Mom, I think you better, because she doesn't like close games. She gets very upset when things aren't going well, right? For Penn State and the Indians, it's if the game is anywhere near being close, she's very unhappy with things. So I told her, I'm like, Mom, just so you know, I think the Penn State pick game is going to be pretty close. I was like, oh, I forget what the line was. And she's like, oh, it was 17.5. My mom now knows the line.
That's the society we live in now with sports gambling sweeping the nation. It's just part of the fabric of the sport. You really can't separate it.
Right. How about, Mike, this game? I thought last week, and I should have said at the top of the show, was a very entertaining day of games. There was a lot of fun games. One that was surprisingly entertaining, and there's so much to unpack in this game. Number 24, Arizona State 10, Michigan State 7. I will admit, when Herm Edwards was named the coach at Arizona State, I thought it was an absolute joke of a hire. I couldn't understand it.
You and everyone else.
Let's be fair. I mean, it's working out pretty well for Arizona State. And to beat Michigan State 2 years in a row, that's pretty good.
Herm Edwards is such an odd person. in the press conference after this game, there were a lot of very controversial calls, of course, in this game. Michigan State being so Sparty, they had 12 people on the field when they kicked the tying field goal.
That was peak Sparty from like 10 years ago. That was
That was when we needed that one announcer who went crazy on Michigan State. But and then they move it back. The guy shanks the field goal, although there should have been a penalty called on Arizona State for leaping, and that was acknowledged by the Pac-12 crew after the game. Apparently, there were a lot of bad calls in this game. But in the press conference afterwards, instead of saying bad calls or bad foul or bad flags, Herm Edwards kept using the term fouls. He said there were a lot of odd fouls. Fouls played a big factor in this game. Foul this, foul that. Like he thought it was basketball or something. I've never heard the term foul used so much in a football context. But actually, this was after we wandered to another brewery in Cleveland. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was there were three Sparty fans dressed head to toe in their Sparty green, nervously watching the very end of this game, and we got to hear them cheer as if they had won the Big Ten title or the Rose Bowl when they hit the tying field goal, and then dead silence as the inevitable Sparty choke unfurled there at the end. I never, ever – I thought it was funny how – and this happens a lot in September. So Michigan State scored 51 points last week right against Western Michigan, I believe it was. And everyone was like, oh, wow, they found an offense. No, they did not find an offense. They played a horrible team. That's a big, big difference. To score 7 points against Arizona State in your home stadium, I don't care what's going on. Offense is a problem there for Sparty.
Indeed. Mike, I didn't put it in the schedule, but you mentioned it before. I need to get your thoughts on the aforementioned Temple-Maryland game. Because last week, in the immediate aftermath of Maryland destroying Syracuse, I tweeted, and I do stand by this, I tweeted that, his previous record as a coach aside, I really believe that Mike Locksley is the perfect fit at Maryland, the most perfect since Fridge was there, and that this year I believe that Maryland's going to beat either Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan. I still stand by that, although I'm a little shaken by the result against Temple. I'm like, look, so Temple's a good team. I think we can agree now, Mike. It's a good, solid program. But what are your thoughts on the Maryland game?
First of all, no insult to you, of course, had Temple as your lock of the week. Great call. But everyone had this circled as a concerned game, right? Maryland ranked for the first time in forever, coming off this big win against Syracuse. I think we're finding out, and we will find out by the end of the year, Syracuse is not a very good team. This is not Syracuse of the last 2 years.
Right.
Their new quarterback is terrible compared to Dungy, especially. Maryland, a big favorite on the road. They're going to Philadelphia to play in a three-quarters empty stadium. Temple came out, and they were the more aggressive team. They were into the game more, not, again, predictably, in the first half. Maryland had 2 points at halftime, I believe. But Maryland, I mean, as poorly as they played, they couldn't have had more opportunities to win this game. They had 4 possessions inside the Temple 20 without scoring a single point. 4. That includes back-to-back possessions inside where they had inside the 15, I believe, late in the fourth quarter. They had a punt return to the 5. They went and they couldn't score in 4 chances from the 5-yard line. Then the Temple punter shanked. He had a 6 or 7 yard punt, and they had 4 chances to score and take the lead in the waning seconds. And Jackson, the quarterback, just did not have a good game. He threw 3 straight passes out of the back of the end zone. But credit to Temple. And this is a game for Maryland. I think possibly even in the long run, it might actually help them. They have to realize that they're not back. They're not as good as they think they are. I still think they can have a great year, and I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Penn State in a couple weeks on a Friday night. By the way, Fridge will be returning to Maryland.
I saw that.
For that game, which is big because there was a lot of bad blood between him and his alma mater about the way he was treated on his way out the door. I don't see them beating Ohio State, but I would not be surprised if they beat Michigan State, Michigan, or Penn State.
Number 9, Florida 29, Kentucky 21. This game was a fun game to watch. And
I didn't see it. You did. So why don't you take this one?
I'll just say this. For I think the last 3 years, if I'm not right, at least the last 2 years, Kentucky clearly outplayed Florida.
Yes. They only won one game, though, last year.
And this game especially, they were the better team, and they deserved to win. And I, as a former kicker, Mike, I do have a soft spot for kickers. And this poor kid, I think he was a freshman or a redshirt freshman, to miss that kick. And that's it was a 32-yarder, maybe?
32, 30. I believe, yeah. Ugh.
It for them to lose that way was absolutely heartbreaking. Stoops has done a tremendous job there at Kentucky, building mm-hmm. them. Like, they're not a team you want to play anymore. They're
exactly.
Kentucky's a good, solid team, and
they're
quasi-relevant. Yeah, and I think they're like legitimately as good as Florida is currently. But yeah, just a tough loss for Kentucky. And like for Kentucky, you are still in this spot where you can't afford to waste wins that are there for the taking. Because you
exactly. Well,
when you're in that division, in that league, like you, it's hard to come by wins. So you wonder about their mentality going forward. But just a tough loss.
And of course, a gruesome injury to Felipe Franks, now out for the year for Florida. But from everything I've read, they really like this Trask character as much, if not more, than Franks as a quarterback down there in Gainesville. So it'll be interesting to see where Florida goes from here.
How about number 21, Virginia, besting Florida State? So this game notable for the way it ended, Mike. Did you see this game?
I saw the highlights of the end.
Okay, so there was definitely some wonky clock things happening.
Yes, there certainly was.
But, and this is, so the start of last season, I remember on our first episode of last year's podcast season, I was saying that I thought that Willie Taggart had great potential and would potentially bring Florida State back to what it was, right? Based on everything we'd seen with Willie Taggart before that. The record was there, and like, you know, look, 75% of the job is still recruiting, and he had the recruiting chops and he knew Florida and the rest of it. I still think that's all true. The issue, which is concerning and which why I think Florida State fans are up in arms right now, is that they don't look like an organized...
Yes, that's the exact word I was going to use, disorganized.
Disciplined team. And we've heard now for 3 or 4 years that Jimbo Fisher, at the end of his reign, let things kind of get out of control. And that Taggart inherited a mess. And I get that. And I don't doubt that it's true. But when you see a team just making organizational mistakes, that's mm-hmm. a problem, right? And that's what I think, we're only a year and not even a year and a half into his tenure, and the furor in the Florida State fan base is already pretty high. Now, do I think it's crazy to think of getting rid of him at this point? Yes. I think there's probably still a lot of like cultural problems that dig very deep. If Jimbo was checked out, then things, and you hear a lot about how Jimbo handled Jameis and didn't handle him correctly and how that spread throughout the entire team. But, I don't know. Florida State's in a bad, bad place. And, Mike, who's in a worse place, Florida State or Tennessee?
That's a great, great question. They're both in awful places. But, why you mentioned the disorganization of Florida State, and I completely agree with that. So they complete this ball inside, deep into Virginia territory with no timeouts, with 6 seconds left. The clock is supposed to stop with 6 seconds left. It goes to 4, which is just bogus hometown
right.
clock operation. Why don't they run up? 4 seconds is plenty of time to spike the ball. They had a first down, but yet they were in shotgun. And I believe it was a direct snap to their great running back, but the play went nowhere. They should have spiked the ball, gathered themselves, and made like a level-headed play call. But they make these mistakes week in and week out at the end of games. But I agree. I would never fire a coach after 2 years unless it was for some kind of egregious mistake, maybe even off the field. You've got right. continually changing your coach and changing the direction of your program is a recipe for failure. All you have to do is look at the Washington Redskins in the NFL. That'll show you that. That's why I've preached patience with Tom Allen, who could be heading toward his third straight 5-7 season. I mean, you just cannot continually change the coach of the program and expect to have the results change instantaneously. So I'd say stick with Taggart, but darker days are in their future before the sun comes back out.
Let's be honest. I mean, you have to look at everything in the context of the current situation in college sports. And Florida State's situation is in a lot of ways very similar to Tennessee's situation, right? The only big learning difference, Tennessee has always, like Michigan, historically had to go out of state to get their
right.
talent. There's not enough talent in the state. But the similarity is, so Tennessee's living in a world where you have Nick Saban at Alabama, Kirby Smart at Georgia, right? You have Dan Mullen, who was a big move for Florida to get at Florida. You have Will Muschamp, who was a pretty experienced guy at South Carolina. The competition is pretty intense right now, right? Florida State is now living in a world where all those schools are pulling from the same places as them, and you have this absolute juggernaut at Clemson, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
You have to sell kids on, hey, come here and change this. Be the change agents to make us back to what we were. And it's easier for kids to say, like, oh, I'll go to Clemson and have a lot of fun with Dabo and
yeah.
win national championships, right?
There are a lot of parallels between Tennessee and Florida State, which is not something that's going to make either one of their fan bases happy.
No. Speaking of Clemson, number one, Clemson 41, Syracuse 6. So I think Clemson, Mike. So it's funny to me, actually, and I've seen a few fleeting moments of Clemson games. I know that his numbers aren't what people expect them to be, but I have to ask, are the Clemson compadres at all worried about Trevor Lawrence and his performance
no.
so far? No. No,
there's nothing to worry about. I mean, you look at their schedule. First of all, Syracuse is not a good team this year. They're grossly overrated heading into the season, and they're just not a good team. I think we'll know that by the end of the year. That being said, there's no one on Clemson's schedule who's even going to. I mean, possibly they. They have to go. They're at North Carolina. They host Florida State. They're at Louisville. I mean, Louisville looked decent, I guess. They host Boston College. They host Wofford. They're at NC State. They host Wake Forest, who's looked decent, and they play South Carolina. But if Clemson plays at even 75% of its capacity, they will not be tested even until the playoff.
Right.
And so that's why there's absolutely no need to worry about the performance of Trevor Lawrence. He's thrown a couple picks. He's not looked as good as he did last year, but he still looked pretty damn good. And their wide receiver core, the amount of weapons they have on offense is just preposterous. And then the way their defense has played, if they had one question mark, and I'm putting quotes around a question mark because they lost four all-world defensive linemen, it was that defensive line and the defense, and they've looked terrific. I mean, holding Syracuse to 6 points, holding a Texas A&M to essentially 3 points. I don't see a weakness on Clemson.
Finally, number 18, Iowa 18, Iowa State 17. Is that right, score, Mike? Is that right? Did I have that right?
Yeah, 8-8. You did. 18-17 Hawkeyes in a game that was, again, delayed 2 hours by weather.
I have so much to say about this. First of all,
love this rivalry.
Oh my god, it's my favorite rivalry now. So, game day in Ames looked awesome.
It did. Did you see the story on the Cy-Hawk Trophy?
That's what is. So, yes, and I fall into the trap of thinking I know everything about college football. But how is that the greatest game day story of all time?
Every story Gene Wojciechowski does, I love, first of all. And number two, yes, it created out of thin air by a bunch of guys on a bowling team. Now, there were, because of time ramifications, I still have a lot of unanswered questions. It was like, and then they took the trophy to the governor who signed a proclamation saying it's going to be the official trophy. Well, how does that work? Did you just go, how do six guys on a bowling team get a meet and greet with the governor? I didn't understand that part of the story, but the trophy, they created the Des Moines Athletic Club. It doesn't even exist
I think it's
anywhere.
The Greater Des Moines Athletic
Club. Greater Des Moines Athletic Club. The trophy itself, and then another question I have, they said it was retired in 2011, and they brought in that insane trophy of a family kneeling in a cornfield or something that was quickly swept aside. Why was that original Cy-Hawk trophy retired? That's the greatest trophy in all of college football.
So, like, real quickly, Mike, so people didn't see it, explain what the story was. I mean, it's, so, I had no idea.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but from 1936 to 1977, for reasons that were only described as, quote, bad blood, Iowa and Iowa State did not play each other. The rivalry was renewed in either 76 or 77. This one guy who had apparently no relation to anything other than being a guy from Iowa who likes football and was interested in the rivalry said, his 10-year-old son said, there needs to be a trophy for this game. So he and some of his bowling buddies from a bowling league got together and said, we're going to create this trophy called the Cy-Hawk Trophy. And they incorporated a Greater Des Moines Athletic Club, even though it doesn't exist anywhere. It's just a piece of paper. They somehow got the governor to sign off on this, and it became the official trophy of the Iowa-Iowa State game until 2011. It was absolutely a fantastic story. It's everything that's great about college football.
Perfect. And I will say too, I'd never seen live footage of Ames, and I saw the stadium, like, oh, this makes sense. And also, it looked like what I thought Ames would look like. Beyond that, I was thinking, I was like, oh my god, this is so this is Ames, Iowa, a city, quote unquote, of like maybe 48,000 people, who has a stadium in the middle of the city with a capacity of 80,000, right?
It's like, right.
This is a thing that college football makes things that are impossible possible happen. Why Ames, Iowa has a stadium that large is only because of this crazy, crazy game. And then the game was fantastic. You know that Iowa looks down on Iowa State. You know the game means everything to Iowa State versus Iowa. And this is where, going back to Penn State Pitt, it's like, why wouldn't you just embrace it? It is so good for football in your state. It supports high school football in your state.
Just look at the fans, how much it means to the fans.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I love the fact that it's played in September also. Yeah. I think we so many of these great rivalries have become overshadowed because of the conference title games. I still love how that Saturday after Thanksgiving is rivalry, you know, rivalry Saturday.
Right.
But I'm a big fan of, like, you know, your BYU Utah is in September, Iowa Iowa State in September. By the way, the population of Ames, Iowa, 66,000. Yeah. Jack Trice Stadium, one of your favorite names for a stadium for years and years and years, capacity 61,500. So they're basically about the same. But yeah, it was a terrific, terrific game day, outstanding game day. And there was a great piece too by one of the ESPN producers who apparently was an Iowa State fan, and he was very level-headed, and he acknowledged, look, Iowa is the bigger program. Iowa beats us more times than not. But he summarized perfectly why the game means so much to Iowa State and everyone in the state. So yeah, cheers and props to game day for going to Ames, Iowa. And as we will be, Tim, right, as the old college right. Tribe will be when it's your pick. I think you've already zeroed in on the Cy-Hawk rivalry for our next trip when it's your turn to pick.
It's either that or the Holy War in Utah, Mike.
That would be fascinating just from a cultural perspective.
Right. Right.
What is the tailgating like at the
I don't know. One final note on the Iowa game. One of the best game day signs I ever saw was Iowa, 75% vowels, 100% awesome. I love that sign.
that is a great sign. And one quick note about the game. I feel so bad for the Iowa State guy who plowed into his own punt returner, causing the fumble and causing them to lose. Not causing them to lose, but ensuring defeat.
Right.
Against their arch rival. He's got to feel bad. I've certainly never seen a game end that way.
No. All right, Mike, top 25. You ready?
Let's do it quickly.
The best part, others receiving votes. How about one vote for the Minnesota Golden Gophers?
Well, they're undefeated. They've won all their games against a very, very underwhelming slate by less than one possession. That vote is probably from P.J. Fleck himself.
My favorite local team, Temple Owls, 7 votes.
They look tough. I'll tell you, they didn't look talented, but they look tough. They look like a classic Temple team.
Who we got here? Army 50 votes, Oklahoma State 51 votes, Kansas State 91 votes, and beyond that, how about Appy State 2 votes? I like that.
I like that. So, any votes for Air Force?
None.
Interesting, because this could be the best year for all three service academies in recent memory, with Air Force having just beaten Colorado, Army almost beaten Michigan and looking like a complete power, and then Navy blowing out East Carolina this week. And I've read a lot of interviews with Coach Ken Niumatalolo, and he is uncharacteristically very bullish on his team. So keep an eye out for Navy this year.
All right, top 25. We have 25 through 20. TCU, Arizona State, California, Washington, Virginia, Boise State. A very Western bottom five there, Mike.
It is. Cal ranked 20. Cal breaks the top 25 after their upset of Washington. They have to go to Ole Miss this week and play Hotty Toddy. Interesting game there.
19 through 15. We got Wazoo, Iowa, A&M, Oregon, and UCF.
What did you think of Mike Leach's comments about the California case and paying the players?
First of all, my thing with paying the players is like, so the Tim Tebow thing, I'm sure people saw it. He was just impassioned speech about how it's wrong to pay players, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay. To me, it's like, I don't know why people care so much. Like, why do you hate the idea of people paying players? It's not your money, so why do you care? That's my thing. Like,
they're defensive. They want to guard their game. They want the game to remain pure as they see it in their eyes and their minds.
Yeah, it's just like silly. It's like, I mean, why do you? I'm not gonna do it because it's political, Mike. I'm not gonna.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Where to leave off? I'm Washington State, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You're at 15, I think.
All right. So about so tied at 13 in the poll is Wisconsin and Penn State, which seems right to me. And we have Texas, Michigan, Utah.
Michigan. The fact that Michigan is ranked higher than Wisconsin is ridiculous. Although, thankfully,
right?
We'll get to it. Yeah. What number is Michigan ranked?
11.
Name one thing, one single thing Michigan has done to make you think they're a top 25 team this year.
They went to Rome last summer, I think.
That's a good one. Not many programs could afford that. You're right. That's top 15 in college football.
We have 9, Florida also. Look, we can agree Tennessee's a mess right now. Would you be absolutely shocked if Tennessee beat Florida this week?
I'd be very surprised, but I wouldn't be absolutely shocked.
No. How about Auburn at 8, Notre Dame at 7, and then we have, of course, like we have the this is like, what's that group, the most powerful nations in the world, the G7?
Oh, yeah, the G6 in this case.
So we have Ohio State, Oklahoma, LSU, Georgia, Alabama, Clemson. Look, there's a lot of buzz about Joe Burrow right now. But are you comfortable with the idea of LSU being 4 and then Oklahoma and Ohio State being 5 and 6? I'm not, Mike.
I am, if you're going to say, look, the rankings, you know, people have talked for generations about how meaningless they are. But LSU has the best win of those three programs that you just – going to Texas and winning in Austin is better than any win Oklahoma or Ohio State has. Now, if you were to just ask me out of those three teams who I think is the best, I'd say Ohio State. But, you know, we're going to get to find out as the season unfolds. Very, very LSU's offense, I will say, has been eye-opening this season.
In what way, Mike?
They're scoring tons of points and they're throwing the ball.
Which is a big change for LSU.
A big change.
Interesting. By the way, so I mentioned last week that I've rediscovered the Bill King Show. Mike, you need to find this app. The show is better than ever. It's so, so good.
What app is it?
I'll send it to you. He's working now at a big sports talk radio station in Nashville, but the show is still national because of he's Bill King, right? We agree he's like the best. And you know, Bill has things there's terms he won't allow on his show. So his new thing is he just, there's something he doesn't want to talk, but he only talks in terms of exculpatory evidence for teams. Right? And he's still with LSU, I think, a little bit like, you know, is there enough exculpatory evidence to have them in this situation? So anyway, you got to find it. I'll send you the app. It's fantastic.
And Mike, one other interesting note on Bill King, he absolutely hates Chris Fowler.
Chris Fowler and also targeting.
I'd urge everyone to Google that.
Mike, games of the week. You ready?
Yep.
Here's a fun one. Number 10, Utah at USC, 9 p.m. Friday on Fox Sports 1. God knows where USC is right now. A lot of expectation on Utah. So we shall see, right?
Two tremendous games this week, both at 9 p.m. on Friday. I mean, then you got Air Force and Boise right at the same time slot. USC, by the way, getting 3.5 at home. This is a dangerous spot for Utah. A lot will be told. We'll learn a lot about the Pac-12 in general, and certainly the Pac-12 South after this game. But I'd be a little tentative to take Utah for some reason.
What are your thoughts on Air Force Boise?
It's going to be tough for Air Force on a short week after such an emotional win, beating Colorado, their in-state rival, for the first time since 1960-something against a Boise team that's certainly more used to success. So I would lean Boise in that game. Boise favored by 8.
I'll say, too, I think you might agree, Mike, that when we travel to these different places and see games, you gain a certain attachment to that, an understanding and attachment to that place, right?
Yes, like, absolutely.
I do care more about Tennessee football for whatever reason, because I was there for a game.
Like, right.
Same thing for Air Force. I'm like, oh, like, I see what this is.
Yeah.
So I kind of like root for these teams we've gone to visit, right?
I completely understand you. And I would also add, you say care about it, also understand the anguish of the fans.
Right.
Like, we saw the pain of the Tennessee fan when we were there 2 years ago. So now we can only imagine how much worse it's gotten. But yeah, I agree with you. Air Force, you certainly pay attention to their scores, their highlights more often. You try and watch them more often. You do have a little bond with them.
Tennessee at number 9, Florida, noon, ESPN. Again, to me, and I know Tennessee's hot garbage. They are, right? They're a program in massive transition, and there's a lot of political backfighting, the rest of it. I'm not convinced that Florida is really that good. And I could see if Tennessee could just like play halfway decent, at the very least, I think Tennessee keeps this game close. And I would not be shocked if they won the game.
Closer than 14 points, because that's the spread.
Yes, closer than 14 points.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But by how this rivalry has fallen from its glory days of Peyton Manning and the old ball coach.
Right. This is for only because for laughs, Mike. Describe the atmosphere at Boston College at Rutgers, noon kick, BTN. So first of all, the crowd is like, what, 12,500 maybe?
The weather, I haven't looked at the weather, but I'm going to predict with 99% certainty cloud and just
drizzly.
Grayness.
Yeah.
Drizzly grayness. I saw a great stat about Rutgers a couple weeks ago. They've, in the last 9 seasons, they've had 9 different offensive coordinators. hard to win when you're changing offenses each year. But 7-point favorites, BC on the road, a team that just got housed by Kansas at home, is now a 7-point favorite at a Big Ten team.
And this is a reminder too, so folks should know and just keep this in mind that both Boston College and Rutgers are in the Power 5 and UCF is not, Mike. Just want to point that out.
That's a very good observation. And I'd also like to say I think it's odd that I have yet to go to a game in Piscataway, New Jersey. It's only about, what, how far away from Philly is that? Hour and a half.
I get on the train with Jack. There's an Amtrak line rides right past Piscataway. There's a stop in Piscataway or New Brunswick, I think. So I thought about, like, oh, it'd be fun just like to hop on the train and randomly go to game at Rutgers, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. I mean, Penn State plays there every other year, so next time Penn State plays, let's try and go.
Right. Sparty at Northwestern, noon ABC. This game has 6-3 written all over it, right?
it absolutely does. And Northwestern getting 9.5 points at home, I've got to take Northwestern because they always look crappy in the non-conference part of their schedule, right? And then they always, you know, they're gonna win some ugly slugfest against a team like a Michigan State. So I'm taking Northwestern plus the 9.5.
Probably the biggest game of the second best game of the weekend. Number 8 Auburn at number 17 Texas A&M. Also an interesting class of cultures, but like, are they more similar than dissimilar, Mike? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because we don't know any much about Texas A&M, right? Because they didn't look good at Clemson, but who's going to look good at Clemson?
Right.
Auburn has a nice win against Oregon, but again, early in the season, we don't know much about Oregon. Texas A&M, 4-point favorite. I was, of course, at Kyle Field and know firsthand what an awesome atmosphere it is down there. The 12th man is real. It will impact Auburn with the true freshman quarterback. He's not going to be able to, I don't think, create the kind of plays that he did against Oregon. So this will be quite the test. I think if Auburn wins this game, it will announce that they're a real contender.
Number 15, UCF at Pitt, 330 ABC. Mike, I just can't see UCF by 75.
As we already talked about this one, 11.5. You're making it your lock of the week, going with UCF.
Number 16, Oregon at Stanford, 7 p.m. ESPN. Again, I think Stanford, first of all, do you agree or disagree with David Shaw's decision to change the formula?
Well, I'll say off the bat that David Shaw knows more about football than I will ever know. So I'm more inclined to think that most of these guys know what they're doing. It does seem a little bit odd to mess with such a winning formula.
Right.
It almost smells. It's a classic. Hey, we're Stanford. We're winning 8-9 games a year, which is great, and we should be happy with that. But we're not. You know, people don't understand what success is for their program a lot of times.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it smells like that kind of situation. But Oregon going on the road where they've not been good in the last 3-4 years. They're Stanford getting 10.5 points. No one giving them a chance. This one just smells like it might be some kind of Stanford keeping it close to me.
Speaking of which, Oklahoma State at number 12, Texas, 7:30 ABC. I don't know, Mike. I think the Cowboys are lurking here, and Texas, I know it's 2 weeks removed, had invested a lot in that LSU game.
Mm-hmm.
If Texas is thinking they are back based on playing it close against LSU, Oklahoma State will have a say in this game. This is
Oh my God. Yeah, definitely. And the gambling community agrees with you because the game opened Texas minus 9.5 and it's down to Texas minus 5. So all the money, a lot of the money coming in on Oklahoma State. But how is Texas? We saw them get their secondary get picked apart by LSU. Oklahoma State can certainly do that to Texas's secondary as well.
They do to anybody.
You're hearing a lot of chatter too on the various media shows that we listen to about Oklahoma State possibly being kind of a spoiler or an underrated Big 12 team. So this could be a very, very entertaining game on Saturday night. Over under of 73, so it should be a lot of points.
Very quick, Mike. So since you've been to both places and you're like one of like probably 7 people in the world who've been to both places, if you had to recommend a game at Stillwater or A&M, where would you go?
Oh, God, that is tough. There, A&M is a bigger experience in all sense of the word. It's a way bigger school. You're in Texas. It's a bigger stadium. It's louder. But I loved Stillwater. I love the size of the stadium. I love the campus. The campus was surprisingly brick. I think I remember reporting back to you. It's a very pretty brick. Yeah. A lot of buildings are brick campus, where I wouldn't say that Texas A&M was anything about College Station or the campus was pretty.
Right.
It's not the word I would use. I'd use the word big. so it's tough because they're very different. So if it was just an average game, you know, if Texas A&M wasn't playing anyone huge and Oklahoma State wasn't playing anyone huge, let's say they were each playing Baylor, right? A Big 12 team, Big 12 team, Baylor. I forgot that Texas A&M is in the SEC. I would go to Oklahoma State for that kind of mid-level game. But if it was a big, big game like the game I went to, Texas A&M and Clemson, I'd have to go say Kyle Field.
That's good content, Mike. I love that.
Thank you.
All right. How about Colorado at number 24, Arizona State? What a test for the Sun Devils, right? Coming off an emotional win. It's a late kick. Colorado, I think, is a decent team. This could be interesting, right? And if I'm feeling energized, I may try and stay for the 10 p.m. kick on the Pac-12 network, Mike.
Oh, I can't wait to get a report on next week's podcast about how many minutes into the first quarter you made it past 10. This is an interesting game. Could have ramifications in the Pac-12 South. I was actually doing a little investigating about this game in which Arizona State is favored by 7.5. Seems like a lot of points for two good teams and an Arizona State team that's very offensively challenged. But Colorado historically does not play well in the desert there. They're 0-5 against the spread in their last five meetings in Arizona State. And the home team rules this rivalry as well, 6-0 against the spread in the last six meetings in either place. So history says, you know, if I were to glance at this, I'd lean Colorado, but history says Arizona State.
Have you been to Tempe, Mike?
I have not been to Tempe.
So I've been to Tempe, but not for a game. And having been there in the summer, like, I can see how it would be a tough place to play. First of all, the stadium is awesome. It's a beautiful stadium.
That's
great
not
setting.
The word I was I'm very surprised to hear you describe it that way.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful stadium. It's a great, cool kind of college town feel. You're in the desert. So that has to be an advantage, right?
Great analysis there.
It's in the desert. It's brown everywhere. Anyway, interesting. Mike, finally.
The Colorado kids, it's quite an adjustment for Colorado kids to go play in Arizona State. I would agree with you there.
Finally, and look, I think I had an impassioned speech last week about the importance of great non-conference games. I'm sorry. If you were last year a Georgia fan going to play in South Bend against Notre Dame, you have to relish that experience. Right.
It's a must attend. It's a pilgrimage for those Georgia
fans. Vice versa. If you're a Notre Dame fan, get a chance to go down to Athens to play in Athens in an 8 p.m. kick, the biggest game of the weekend. Why wouldn't you? And look, ticket prices are apparently outrageous. I'm hearing like it's like $800 and above for tickets right now. They're expecting 200,000 people just being at tailgating for this game.
Yeah, and without tickets.
Right. This is what college football should be. And there's so many combinations of games where we could have so many wonderful games. I mean, speaking as a Penn State fan, I know in, I think, 2021, 22, there's going to be a Penn State-Auburn home-and-home. How great that would be.
Really?
Yeah.
That will be cool.
And I know what the answer is why there's not more of these, but I just give credit to Georgia and Penn State Georgia and Notre Dame for doing this because, I mean, anyone who loves college football has got to be excited about this game, right? What a fun game.
Oh, I'm just looking at the logos, you know, on my site that I look at to get the spreads. They show each logo. And just looking at the logos, it's just so cool seeing them next to each other.
Right.
8 p.m. kickoff. I'll be watching with noted listener Brian Schlater either here at my rooftop or at the Georgia Bar Hux. We'll see. UGA, 14-point favorite, opened at 10.5. So the betting public certainly likes the dogs. What's interesting about this game, I think, is, you know, they played 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago or was it last year? It was 2 years ago, I believe. And it was such a close game, and Georgia won it at the end. But Notre Dame played with them. But Notre Dame has played with the big boys, but they haven't beaten the big boys in the Brian Kelly era, right?
Right.
And this, because of their status, their schedule and their status as an independent, if Notre Dame loses this game, they are out of the playoff race, essentially.
Yes.
Whereas if Georgia loses this game, they can certainly, if they were on the table and then win the SEC, they will still be in the playoff with one loss, and that loss is to Notre Dame, assuming they don't get blown out by Notre Dame, which no one believes will happen. So I think that's an interesting little twist, but I'm so excited to watch this game, and I will be watching it in its entirety.
Mike, our picks last week were what?
Well, Tim, you've overlooked the second biggest game of the week.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
In your beloved Big Ten Conference, Michigan and Wisconsin.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. I guess, yeah.
That is a major, major oversight.
Yeah.
A nooner, the Wolverines and Badgers, each coming off a bye, which I think is interesting. Wisconsin favored by 3.5 based on what I've seen this season so far. Now, granted, Wisconsin, of course, hasn't given up a point but has not played good competition. Michigan struggled with Army and has looked terrible on offense. I would still, until Harbaugh proves he can win these games as an underdog or win a big game, I'm going to go with Wisconsin. What about you?
Absolutely in the same boat.
Yeah.
They're the better team, even despite the fact they don't have a quarterback. But I think Michigan, again, I said last week, I think the game is past Harbaugh by a little bit. I don't think he's what he was. So
yeah, well, that's an interesting game too.
Again, Mike, our picks last week were what?
Tim, you absolutely nailed Temple, of course, with the outright win. You're 3-0.
I know Temple well, Mike. They're near
you
near
do know
my
Temple
heart.
Very yeah. well. I unfortunately went with the NC State Wolfpack. Noted listener, and your cousin was upset with me when he arrived at the bar. And credit to West Virginia, they looked very, very good in Morgantown and cruising to an easy win over the Wolfpack. So I dropped to 2-1.
Bobby hit the bumper.
Plays bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lot, probably loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
For this week's Lock of the Week, Tim, we are going to beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. That's right, home of one Bill King,
mm-hmm.
where the LSU Tigers come in to face a reeling, to say an understatement, Vanderbilt team. LSU, 23.5-point favorites on the road. That's a huge number until you consider that Georgia already played at Vanderbilt, won by 24, and LSU's offense is clicking on a level far beyond Georgia's. LSU only had 3 points in the first quarter last week. Granted, it's against Northwestern State, but they ended up with 65 in a game in which they sleepwalked. They torched that Texas secondary. They are rolling on all cylinders, and I just cannot see Vanderbilt hanging with them at all. So I'm going to take LSU with a big, big win, minus 23.5 at Vandy.
So, Mike, is there a way for me to make a pick that I could do a parlay this week?
Yes, you want double credit? The parlays are crazy. You have to hit two in a row. Well, let me tell me what you're thinking, and I'll let you know if it's a good idea.
So I'm thinking, of, as aforementioned, UCF covers comfortably against Notre Dame. But also Georgia against Notre Dame, I think it's almost a guarantee that Georgia's going to cover against Notre Dame.
Really? You think Georgia will have a 2-touchdown win?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll just leave that on record. We'll just leave that on record, but that's not going to be your official pick. Go with UCF. Always go with your first gut instinct.
Okay, so I have UCF as my official pick, and then I'll look up, is it possible to find the details in the parlay and see if it worked out, Mike?
If you parlay, you keep using the word parlay, and I don't think you know what it is. So a parlay is you bet both games, you have to win them both, and if you win them both, you win 3 times your money, essentially.
Right.
2.5 or 3 times your money.
But they also reduce the lines, right? So it changes?
No, that's a teaser.
Oh, a teaser.
A teaser is when you move the lines, and then you don't get paid odds.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. That's my level of expertise, Mike. And also, I don't.
Your mom probably knows all about this.
I don't also yet have the Parks app, which is probably a good thing, I think.
Just ask your mom how teasers and parlays work.
Right. All right, Mike, so your plan for this weekend is what?
I'll actually be on a golfing trip this weekend, but we will be coming back mid-Saturday. So I'll watch the Indiana-UConn game probably on tape on Sunday. But we will be primed and ready to watch Georgia-Notre Dame somewhere here in the great city of Baltimore with some Bulldogs fans. Hopefully we won't see any Notre Dame fans, but I'm really excited to watch a night game in its entirety and watch a big game like that.
I have one final note, Mike, and this is my last Bill King shout out, but he mentioned it in his show and I love this so much. So again, we've been to Knoxville for a game, and if there's one grudge that Tennessee fans carry greater than any other, it is Charles Woodson winning the Heisman over Peyton Manning in 1997, correct? This was a real thing. So apparently there was a photo of someone on Twitter who went to last week's Tennessee versus Chattanooga game, not just wearing a Charles Woodson Raiders jersey or a Packers jersey. He wore a Charles Woodson Michigan jersey to the Tennessee game.
Oh, trolling at its greatest. Right,
the absolute height of trolling. Because that's like, that is not just trolling, but you're trolling at a level where like...
You're putting yourself in physical harm.
And also like, that's an intentional 20-year-old troll.
Right? Yes, yes.
I just love that. And I was like, oh, that's the most college football thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Someone wearing a Charles Woodson Michigan jersey to a Tennessee game.
Yeah, that's more NFL level, actually, I would say. So? Yes. It's that bad.
All right, folks, thank you for listening, Mike. As always, it's great talking to you, Mike, and I'm very happy I'm 3-0 and you're 2-1.
That's right. It's a long season though, Tim. I just hope by next week you know the difference between a parlay and a teaser.
I'm learning. All right, Mike, just one thing to say.
Pachas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit intelligentcollegefootball.com.